Eros audio programming is provided in part by the independent television service, ITVS. Fred Martinez was a Navajo boy who was also a girl. In an earlier era, he would have been revered. Instead, he was murdered. Free screenings of Two Spirits in 90 cities across the country in June, and airing on PBS's Emmy Award-winning series, Independent Lens, beginning June 14th. www.communitycinema.org.
Welcome to Producer Profiles, a production of Native American Public Telecommunications, with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Here's NAPT Production Assistant Ben Kramer.
Christine Layshock is an Emmy-nominated Peabody Award-winning film producer. She has produced numerous PBS documentaries throughout her career and is currently a producer for NET Television. Many of her films revolve around Native American themes, including her latest documentary, Standing Bear's Footsteps. Priscilla Parker, from the Omaha Tribe, is a media maker and associate producer of Standing Bear's Footsteps. She graduated from Creighton University in 2008 with a bachelor's degree in broadcast theater and has worked in numerous roles within television and video production. I spoke with Layshock and Parker about their work on Standing Bear's Footsteps, a film about Ponca Chief Standing Bear and human rights. Here is the interview from April 2011, beginning with Christine Layshock.
The film, I think, in a nutshell, is about what it means to be a person as told through the life of a Ponca Indian chief and his struggle to be free.
In the film Standing Bear's Footsteps, how is Standing Bear's story told?
It is a historical documentary that interweaves interviews, some reenactments. The voice of Joseph Marshall III, who's a Lakota writer who's written a book about Crazy Horse and many other well-known books, and who has a very marvelous native-sounding voice. Really wonderful treasure trove of still photos, historical photos, that my associate producer, Priscilla Parker, helped find, and some archival film that is pretty interesting, too.
The following is a soundbite from Standing Bear's Footsteps.
In a place far from home, a father made a promise to his dying son. To keep that promise, he would challenge the government in a trial unlike any other in American history.
Would you be asked if you were a human being in order to achieve your legal rights?
Nombe te hihate ewaki gumbaji. I am a man. The same God made us both.
How did the project first come about?
There was an NET feature film called The Trial of Standing Bear that was produced here. And that film was aired on PBS, and it's still out there. People still request it down at the Standing Bear Museum in Ponca City, Oklahoma. They screen that film every day. It's somewhat dated in its style. There are some problems with it in terms of Standing Bear, who speaks perfect English. And you never hear the Ponca language, but you can understand why they had to do that. There's no Suzette LaFleche in the story whatsoever. The genesis of this film was having seen that film. I thought, you know, it's time for another story about Standing Bear, but this time told with the historical record in mind, not a feature film, not actors with a somewhat made-up script, but what was the story? What really happened? And little did I know, but around that very same time, which was way back in October of 2005, that was when Joe Sterita was beginning to write his book. And I didn't even know Joe Sterita. We didn't meet until I found out he was writing the book and started interviewing him. So that really gave a boost to the whole storytelling, because he was researching every detail, turned over every rock. He knew the story inside and out by the time I interviewed him, which was a real help, because not many people do know the details. They all know the general outline, those who know it. Standing Bear wanted to bury his son in Nebraska. He walked all the way back from Oklahoma. But they don't know the really fascinating little details that Joe and people like him know.
In the following sound clip, author Joe Sterita talks about the consequences of Standing Bear's victory in court.
He suddenly was a man without a country. It was illegal for him to go back to the Indian Territory and rejoin the other Ponca because he had disassociated himself from the tribe. It was illegal for him to go back after what he had said in court. And it also meant, according to the law, that he could not go back to the traditional homeland, the confluence of the Niobrara and the Missouri, because that land was owned by the Lakota, and he could be arrested as a trespasser.
Priscilla, how did you become involved in this project?
At first, I was involved in the Native Daughters Project and taking some UNL students to the Omaha Reservation and finding a day-in-the-life kind of story. From that project, Christine's documentary was starting, and so I kind of applied for it and was accepted.
Priscilla, can you talk about how your Native ethnicity played a role in the production of this film?
It was very interconnected. It was great. I got to know so many people on the Omaha Reservation, just asking around about people to play Standing Bear or location, some of the horse scenes. So I got to know a lot of people, and that was also from Native Daughters, too. It was just a great learning process for me. I didn't know any of the history. The Poncas and Omahas are very close, and this kind of draws it out with the Standing Bear story. I'm just very thankful for all the information I do know now.
This story is interesting because I see Standing Bear as being one of the original civil rights activists. And aside from the 80s Standing Bear reenactment film that you had mentioned, Christine, why do you think it took so long for there to be a documentary about him?
I think part of it is we never learned the story in school, and it was literally forgotten. From about the time of Standing Bear's death to the mid-80s when NETV resurrected the story, it wasn't out there. There might have been an article or two written about it.
Well, we found out that since the case didn't go to the Supreme Court, it was not given all the recognition that it could have.
Yeah, that's a very important point. The fact is that Standing Bear won, but then the U.S. government shut down all appeals and shut down the whole process that Standing Bear and Thomas Tibbles, the reporter, and Suzette LaFleche, they wanted Standing Bear's victory to lead to citizenship for Native Americans, and it never happened. And so as a result, as attorneys put it, his trial was an anomaly. It didn't lead to big changes in Native American history or the lives of Native people. Standing Bear's own brother was shot and killed for leaving the reservation. So the reason that this is not known is that it didn't lead to the kind of victories that you would have hoped it would. And that's the irony in the story that I find so powerful, that Standing Bear has this victory in court, and then he's homeless, and then his brother's shot, and then he finally gets a tiny little piece of his land back.
In the following sound clip from the film, narrator Joseph Marshall III tells what happened to Big Snake, Standing Bear's brother.
Few realize that Judge Dundee's decision applied only to those Indians who had given up their tribal status. As a member of the Southern Ponca tribe, Big Snake had no rights under the 14th Amendment. He was arrested for leaving the reservation and taken back to the Ponca agency. Big Snake had been imprisoned before, and he wasn't going to let it happen again. A scuffle broke out, and he was shot between the eyes.
I'm curious about the archival film and images you used in the film. What was the experience like digging for these materials and getting them into the film?
I researched anywhere that Standing Bear Suzette might have gone, and some of the research that Joe had done before, too. It was really fun. I liked it. Finding history, like my own tribe, the Poncas, and seeing what historical societies and Smithsonian has. And Christine had some film before from the Nebraska State Historical Society we were going to go look at. And we were really lucky to find the American Indian Film Gallery, which was owned by McDonald. And he basically sent us some footage that we used like every second that we could out of it. So
yeah, that was remarkable. Prince said to me one day, you got to look at this film, Fallen Eagle. Well, it was some kind of a strange educational film about the Lakota, but there were scenes in it that if you took it away from the corny other part of it, they were pretty powerful.
While digging for the archival materials, did you uncover any big surprises?
The Four Crusaders photo, we could not locate the copyright owner. And we actually had to recreate Standing Bear's half of the face because a little part of the picture was gone. So we had to recreate that in the graphics department. And that's the one that I was really looking for, but there was just nothing.
Yeah, we found it on a CD. And that's the only place we've ever seen it. It's the only time I know of where those four people are in a picture together. Thomas Tibbles, Francis LaFleche, Suzette LaFleche, and Chief Standing Bear. The people who, after Standing Bear's trial, got on a train and went back east and crusaded for Indian rights.
Now I'd like to talk about Bright Eyes, which is the companion piece to Standing Bear's Footsteps. Priscilla, can you talk about what Bright Eyes is about?
Bright Eyes is a 5-minute story, and it uses footage from Standing Bear's Footsteps and The Trial of Standing Bear. And it kind of tells a sweet, short version of Standing Bear, but through Suzette's presence. It's kind of a personal piece, too, because I bring up my own family and being in Omaha and what that meant to me, and just kind of my experience in learning about Suzette and researching her, too. I hope to inspire young Native American women, my sisters, and also just to get more media out there about the Omahas, the Standing Bear story, and Suzette, because nobody on the Omaha Reservation really knows about the La Flesh family.
It was pretty amazing to me to see the personal stuff in there, because even though Prince and I had worked together day after day, I didn't know about her family story until I saw it, and it helped me to appreciate the struggle she's had to go through to get to where she is.
For both of you, how did you become interested in filmmaking as a medium for storytelling?
Well, since I was very little, I remember we used to watch TV a lot, movies a lot. So I used to love films. And I told my mom I wanted to be a film director before I even knew what they did, really. I knew this was something that attracted to the storytelling aspect. And in college, I started out in photojournalism. And what that does is telling a story in one image. So that was really like a challenge for me, and I loved it. It was great. And I did my first multimedia project, which involved video. After I seen a screen in front of the audience, I was just like in love. It was after that point where I'm like, this is what I need to do. I need to switch my major. I need to keep doing the video. That's how it worked for me.
When I was growing up, I didn't really like movies that much or TV that much, really. So I didn't really think about going into it. But I did leave Nebraska, which was a good thing, and went out to California and ended up going one night to the student films at UCLA. And I thought, oh my God, these are films. I've never seen anything quite like this. This was like 69. I mean, everybody was just kind of wild and crazy. They were so experimental, and they were so different from anything I'd either seen in movies or on TV that I thought, this is what I want to do. And so that's what I ended up doing, going there to school, getting my degree there, master's degree. And then when I finished, I was trying to decide, oh, okay, I've got my film degree. I've made my master's thesis film. Now, should I go to Hollywood? Should I follow in the footsteps of Steven Spielberg? Somehow that didn't seem like something I wanted to do or could do. But I had lots of Native American friends, and I started thinking, I'd like to tell Native American stories. That was actually on my mind at the time. And then it struck me that if I'm going to do that, the best thing to do would be to come back to Nebraska, because this is where the exciting stories happened. So I ended up coming back here and making a number of programs about Native history, inspired by the fact that I had friends out in California who were Native. It's interesting how these things happen.
For both of you, looking back on all the work you've done in media, is there an underlying element or common thread that weaves through everything that you've done and everything that you hope to do in the future?
Well, I want to do a feature film and at least get experience on a big Hollywood production, because that's what I liked when I was little. But now that I've done a documentary and I see all these issues, I have a journalism background, I know there's a lot of issues in Native country that aren't being told. I actually want to do a documentary too, so I'm kind of for both right now.
When I think about the thread through all my films, it's the Great Plains. Whether it be The Fate of the Plains, which was about the history and the future of this part of the country, or Wild Horses, which is kind of a symbol of freedom in the plains, or Standing Bear, or In the White Man's Image, they all take place on the Great Plains, and they have to do with freedom and open spaces.
And to finish up with a question about Standing Bear's Footsteps, what do you hope people will take away from the film?
Well, I hope that people see it and really begin to appreciate Native history in a different way, as personal struggles that very often get lost in the cracks of history, but that are worth appreciating and seeing and feeling, because they're about our shared humanity. They didn't necessarily change history, but what they do is they speak to each and every one of us about the struggles that we're experiencing. Nothing I go through, none of my complaints could possibly compare to what Standing Bear had to struggle through in order to get his son buried. And the very thought that his son died and he's carrying his body home is just so overwhelming. And yet he survived, he did what he promised, and he did not become bitter, resentful, hateful at all. He just accepted the challenges that life threw at him. And he did his very, very best to overcome them. And all he wanted to do in the end was just be left alone, to sit by the Niobrara, smoke his pipe, and exist as a Ponca man, and he succeeded. I just really admire him, and I want other people to know his story.
Hopefully it is taught in the schools, and we can get these stories out. I'm just glad that there's more media concerning Native Americans and what happened, what the struggles were.
It's a great learning object, his life.
That was Christine Layshock and Priscilla Parker talking about their documentary, Standing Bear's Footsteps. For more information about the film, visit nativetelecom.org. The film will premiere and kick off the 2011 Vision Maker Film Festival in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Support for this program was provided by Native American Public Telecommunications through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Interviews were conducted and edited by Ben Kramer with support from Alex Epperson. Theme music written and performed by Jim Boyd. Thank you for tuning in to this edition of NAPT's Producer Profile.